several miles off the main highway. Tucked away in a secluded canyon on prime vineyard property stands a rustic barn that was built many decades before the vines around it were planted. In that barn, a sophisticated broadcast and recording studio has been built. The barn also has a well-hidden root cellar stocked with many of the world's most exceptional wines, only to be shared with guests who secretly come to offer their insights and tell their stories. Guests are sworn to secrecy and are shuttled to the studio aboard a John Deere tractor. Those who cannot make the journey in person are interviewed by satellite hookup, and sometimes the crew simply sneaks away with microphones in hand and interviews guests in barrel rooms, wine cellars, and other magical places. All of this is done like clockwork every single week, so that we can bring you another episode of Grape Encounters Radio.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice, talk to me nice, you've got to wind me.
And it is time for your weekly grape encounter, and I feel like I have been saying this a bit too much lately, but as much as I hate to get political, I'm going to have to get political today in a very big way. I've waited a week or two to see more information come in on the subject that we're going to talk about. And right out of the chute today, Sarah Schneider, wine editor of Sunset Magazine, is joining me in a collaborative effort to try to shed some light on something that unfairly is scaring a lot of consumers, and I mean a lot of consumers, about wine. And it is this arsenic scare that everybody's heard about, I think, that's gone well beyond the wine trades and into the general media, and has had people asking me all day long, every day, is it safe to drink wine? And Sarah, you've probably been getting the same questions.
I've had the same questions from people I know who don't follow wine all that much. They love to drink wine. And they come in and they say, oh my goodness, I've drunk one of those labels. It was one of my favorite labels on the list of arsenic heavy wines. Am I okay? By the way,
we're sitting here right now drinking one of those wines. In fact, we're going to drink four or five bottles to see. Seriously. In fact, let's drink a case just to prove that we're not going to die. Are you game, Sarah?
I'm game. We'll be signing off here before we finish the case, just so we keep our articulateness.
And before the show is over, we will also have on today a representative from the Wine Institute, which, if you're not familiar with the Wine Institute, an awful lot of information that you get about wine in general comes from the Wine Institute. They're a real powerhouse of information and advocacy for winemakers in California, but really providing a wealth of information
Absolutely.
All over the world.
Yeah.
They really are one of the very best go-to places. So we'll be talking to them right here as well in just a little bit. But I wanted to weigh in personally. There are a lot of people who don't want to talk about this issue, and I understand that some of the winemakers who have been named in this class action lawsuit don't really want to talk about it, but it's more that they can't talk about it. But to back up a little bit, if you have not heard the story, you need to know that part first. And Sarah, you want to share the overview on that? And
sure. I understand it, a lab has analyzed 1,300 or 1,400 wines from the West Coast and has found levels of arsenic that are a little bit higher than what the U.S. government allows in drinking water. And those standards vary around the world for arsenic levels, but a consumer advocacy group has come along with a class action lawsuit against 31 wine producers, a very, very large list. Most of them make quite a bit of wine. These are large producers, and they tended to have the higher levels of arsenic. So I can understand the scare. Arsenic is a poison. Arsenic and old lace. Those old women were poisoning people in the most delightful way.
Sarah, you're dating yourself now.
You know, I was a kid when I saw that
movie. How much wine have you poured for, let's just say, men over the ages?
Well, I didn't know that I was poisoning men as I poured wine for them, but
okay,
now
they're
it's getting
dastardly. They're going to be contacting you.
Yeah. Okay.
So I want to start by saying this makes me so angry. It makes me furious because I am convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that the people who have started this scare are purely in it for the money. And I can say that because I'm not named and I have a right to voice my opinion. But I really believe it from everything that I see, because first of all, this isn't a case where 27 people died from arsenic poisoning and somebody went, aha, there are a lot of people that are getting sick and dying. There's not one case
that's
been brought
not.
Forward. Not one person that has stood up and said, I'm being treated for arsenic poisoning and I also drink a lot of cheap wine.
Right. I think there's some serious misunderstanding about arsenic buried in all of
this.
Yeah,
and we're going to talk about that. But I also want to say something about the fact that most of the wines that we're talking about are less expensive wines. The implication is this. Because they're less expensive, they're tinkering with the wine and they're doing something to the wine. And that's not the case. The reason I believe that these particular winemakers have been singled out is because they're high volume winemakers, wine producers, which means deep pockets. They're very successful companies with, you know, very good earnings. And you're going to find that most wineries that are selling expensive wines don't have deep pockets. They're living on the edge. And that's a fact.
You know, this is the kind of thing that makes you cynical about what motivates people to do what they do out there. But you're absolutely right about all of those facts. These are deep pockets, and there is no evidence presented that these particular wineries are producing wines with higher levels of arsenic than anybody else.
Yeah, I'm not going to name any names of the wines that have been singled out in this, except for one, and there's a reason for that. And it's a positive reason, not a negative one. But I will tell you that I know, personally know, a number of the winemakers that are associated with the brands here. And I have walked through vineyards with people who have been named in this suit, and I know their practices firsthand. And I know how committed they are to organic grape growing, sustainability, and all of these wonderful things, and how impeccable their operations are. And for these people to have a finger pointed at them and to be accused of what they're being accused of is obscene. And none of these companies deserve that kind of treatment, because you will hear it over and over and over again, and you'll hear it from quality winemakers, people who sell expensive wines, that some of these companies have been the salvation of the wine industry because they have pioneered technology. They have supported all kinds of social causes. They have developed ways to preserve natural resources. They have been at the forefront of sustainability. And the winemaking practices here in the U.S. are probably as well-managed and health-conscious as any place in the world.
You're making a really good point. I think there's this.
I was trying to make a really good point.
You made it strongly, too. I'm right there with you. There's that misunderstanding, or maybe a myth, that if you're a very, very large producer and you make hundreds of thousands of cases a year, you really don't care about the land or your product. And I'm just looking
It's just the opposite.
I'm looking at this list, and there's some names on there that have absolutely led out in organic winemaking, sustainability, as you just said. So we have to get past that to understand what's going on here.
I can't get past it. I can't. And we're going to talk more about it in just a second. But it's absolutely vile what is happening, because the fact that so many of you are asking Sarah and I whether or not drinking wine, and it's not California wine, by the way, anymore. Now everybody's jumping on the bandwagon, and now we're indicting and filing class action suits in other states as well, because there are lawyers and vultures who think that they can make a lot of money at this. And I hope that you're sued for defamation, and I hope it comes back to haunt you, because this industry didn't deserve it. When you are like Sarah and I out there among these people and see how meticulous they are and how dedicated they are to purity and quality. It's probably the highest standards in the food and beverage industry that are practiced among some of the people who are on the list.
Right. No, so, I completely agree with you there.
So we're going to come back and talk about it a little bit more, and we're going to tell you why this is pure and simple nonsense. And I also will read one response from one of the companies that has been named in the class action suit, because I think they're a very beloved company here in the U.S. So we'll do that next when we return, as we take a critical look at this accusation of winemakers poisoning the wine lovers of the world on Grape Encounters Radio.
You're having a grape encounter with David Wilson. What a way to spend the day.
We're all guilty of sin. We open a costly bottle of wine and recork it with the intent of drinking the rest later. But later comes and goes, and that delicious wine also goes. South, that is. The Coravin is the most reliable way to enjoy your wine without any concern about the unconsumed wine going bad. And while the Coravin wine access system costs a bit more than other preservation systems, it does something they don't. It works. Perfectly. The Coravin is a beautifully engineered handheld device that gives you access to your wine through a small needle that you gently push straight through the cork. Inert argon gas is injected into the bottle, while as little or as much of the wine that you want flows right into your glass. The argon gas keeps your wine so safe, it's as though you never opened the bottle. Want to learn more? Simply click the Coravin link online at grapeencounters.com. A wine is a terrible thing to waste. Get your Coravin at grapeencounters.com.
If you'd like to hear more no-nonsense talk about wine and all the fun that goes with it, check out winetalkshow.com. At winetalkshow.com, you'll find a massive library of content for fun-loving, unpretentious people who aren't afraid to step outside the lines and challenge conventional wisdom. We'll take you places you've never been before. That's a promise. Expand your wine horizons in unimaginable ways at winetalkshow.com.
As a grape encounterist, you know how much fun an hour of conversation about wine can be each week. But there's no way we can pack everything into a show. Listeners just like you are turning the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group into an incredible online community where like-minded wine lovers converse, share information, and inspire each other with posts on a variety of interesting topics. If you haven't discovered your community, join in today on Facebook by entering Grape Encounters Radio.
He's back, and he's not alone. Your Grape Encounter continues with David Wilson and Sunset Magazine's Sarah Schneider. This is Sipping with Sarah on Grape Encounters Radio.
Back with Grape Encounters Radio, and very happy to have sitting in the studio with me Sarah Schneider, the wine editor of Sunset Magazine. Her whole life is wine. My whole life is wine. And I, for one, am furious about the accusations that came down a week or so ago and continue to mount as more class action suits are filed in other places, because there are people out there who think that it's easier to make a living by discrediting honest, decent people than to make it any other way. And there are a lot of people that are getting hurt. Sarah, the fallout of this could be horrific, given the amount of jobs that the wine industry represents and the amount of revenue that it generates just in taxes.
Right. I think there's going to be injury in the industry over this.
And it's not going to be people getting sick from arsenic.
No, that is not what's going to happen. They've taken an area where there's not much knowledge and understanding and sort of taken advantage of it against an industry.
So let's just get down to what really the accusation is. And the funny part about the accusation is, even if it were true, it's not outside the law. at all.
Absolutely. There is no law about arsenic in wine.
Right. And so there's a standard that applies to our drinking water supply that says that you can only have a certain amount of different elements in drinking water. And for whatever reason, this company called Beverage Grades went out and started testing wine for arsenic and then tried to equate the arsenic levels back to the amount that's allowable in water, saying, well, there's several times more arsenic in wine than water, and that the arsenic levels in wine exceeds the allowable amount of arsenic in water, and therefore we need to sue the pants off of these winemakers. And by the way, they also want the winemakers to return every dollar that any consumer ever spent on these wines as part of the reparations.
That's huge.
Yeah, and of course, you know, this is going to be a multi-million dollar suit. And you're going to get something in the mail that says, how much wine did you purchase from so-and-so? And they're going to ask you to produce receipts. And of course, you don't have those receipts. And you're not going to actually get anything, because nobody out there is going to be able to document over the last 20 years how much wine you bought. But the lawyers are going to get paid. And the company that started all this, they're going to get paid. I'm getting very upset.
You are. And I just want to jump in here and say, yes, yes, that is true. And it's completely taking advantage of this scare about the word arsenic. And nobody is going to get to the bottom of it and realize, well, of course, arsenic is a naturally occurring element. There are a lot of toxins that are naturally occurring in the earth, especially the surface.
Yeah, all day, every day across America and throughout the world, people are getting Botox injections in their face, which is botulism. Which has got to be as toxic as arsenic. And under the right circumstances, things that are considered poisonous are not harmful to you at all.
Right. It occurs in our water because our water bubbles through the earth.
It's a natural element.
It picks up.
It's there. Yeah.
So everything that uses a lot of water, like rice crops, they have higher levels of arsenic.
2012, Consumer Reports published the results of its study on the arsenic content of rice. And the tests found that most rice had 100 to 200 parts per billion.
Yeah.
Okay, of arsenic. But a large number of samples exceeded 200 parts per billion, up to 917 parts per billion, which dwarfs the amount that is supposedly in the wines, I want to say indicted, but the wines that
named
they're pointing
the finger
at. Yeah, named in the suit.
Right.
Ridiculous.
Right. And it's not clear that those particular wineries have higher levels than any other winery. But there's all sorts of speculation about how those arsenic levels get there. And of course, the toxicity of arsenic comes from long, long uses of high, high doses. And all of the levels we're talking about in this particular lawsuit are well below other standards in the world.
The highest level that's being claimed where wine is concerned is 50 parts per billion.
Right.
And the UN sets its standard at 200 parts per billion. And the EPA standard for drinking water is 10 parts per billion.
Right.
And the highest amount that was found in these tests, and by the way, they've not shared any test results at all.
That's what I understand.
But CBS News tested the very same products and found considerably lower amounts of arsenic than what this specialist supposedly found. And why were they testing this anyway? What was their reason for getting involved in this?
It's so murky.
Well, let me put it in perspective. The amount of arsenic that is in the worst offending wine, if you want to call it offending, is the equivalent, are you ready for this, of 1 second, 1 second in 32 years.
Wow.
1 second.
That's a perspective.
In 32 years. It's the equivalent of one pinch of salt on 10 tons of potato chips. That's what we're talking here. Ain't nobody dying from arsenic.
You would have to drink an awful lot of wine, more than even you and I could consume in a session.
Yeah, there's nobody dying from arsenic. Don't let these kinds of legal terrorists take something away from you, because you don't deserve it. The winemakers don't deserve it.
That's quite a metaphor.
It is.
I think you're right.
It's terrorism.
In wine terms. And I'm guessing that the wine industry is going to defend itself in fine form over this because I think they have the law on their side.
That's the end of it. We're going to now have on a representative from the Wine Institute, and they will share their perspective on it. So don't go anyplace because I think you're going to want to hear what they have to say. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters after this.
We like to talk about wine.
Just where is wine country? At Grape Encounters, we know it's coast to coast and continent to continent. Our microphones have traveled far and wide on vino train trips, across a vineyard via zipline, into the castles of American aristocracy, to the midway at a county fair, into the kitchens of chefs whose culinary artistry is inspired by wine, and front and center for extraordinary tastings and pairings. Where will we go next? We're on the lookout for events, businesses, and people that embody the spirit of Grape Encounters Radio. Share your suggestions. If you know of a great place or event that we should broadcast from, or have a business or guest idea, we want to hear about it. Grape Encounters can deliver national awareness, and we're as close as an email away. Drop us a line. Write to David at GrapeEncountersRadio.com. That's David at GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
If you have a thirst for wine knowledge, be it trivia or the latest trends, there's a website that's overflowing with content that we've created just for you. It's GrapeEncounters.com, where you'll find literally hundreds upon hundreds of stories and interviews covering almost every topic imaginable. From the world's most colorful and renowned winemakers to unforgettable wine adventures, there's something for every wine lover at GrapeEncounters.com. Go ahead, log on, uncork, pour, swirl, and sip.
We're all guilty of sin. We open a costly bottle of wine and recork it with the intent of drinking the rest later. But later comes and goes, and that delicious wine also goes. South, that is. The Coravin is the most reliable way to enjoy your wine without any concern about the wine going bad. And while a Coravin wine access system costs a little bit more than other preservation systems, it does something they don't. It works. Learn more about the Coravin at GrapeEncounters.com. GrapeEncounters.com.
May there be no lawyers in heaven, no legal eagles up there in the sky. May there be no lawyers in heaven. Oh Lord, let them go somewhere else when they die.
Right, back with Grape Encounters Radio, and I am now sitting on the 10th floor of 425 Market Street in downtown San Francisco. That is the home office for the Wine Institute. And if there's any organization that swings a big hammer when it comes to wine, it certainly is the Wine Institute. They are, well, actually, I'm going to let Gladys Horiucci, who's the Director of Media Relations, go over the scope of what the Wine Institute does, because you guys cover so many bases. And welcome to the show.
Hi, David. Thanks for the invite. The Wine Institute is the trade association for 1,000 California wineries, and we are a public policy advocacy group. And a lot of our issues are not only for California, but they're national and international because California makes 90% of the country's wine.
So the kinds of things that you work on here are things that might be echoed in other states and other wine associations, et cetera.
That's true. We work on punitive taxes. We just want fair taxes. And there's various direct-to-consumer shipping regulations and laws. We get 21 million visitors to California wine regions every year, and they may want to ship wine back to their state, and it's not always legal. So we've been helping to change those laws so a limited amount of wine can get back to a consumer's home back in various states. And then we have a program for exporting wine and another department for promoting sustainable wine growing at our California wineries.
And by the way, your website has a plethora of information. If you need to know anything about California wine, the first place you might want to start is at the Wine Institute website, which is wineinstitute.org, right?
Right. That's more trade-oriented. For more consumer-oriented information about the wine regions and the wineries and food and wine, that would be at discovercaliforniawines.com.
So I'm sitting in your office, and the one thing I'm noticing is your phone is not ringing off the hook. And that's a good thing, because everywhere I've been, people have stopped me and asked me about this arsenic scare. I call it an arsenic hoax, but it seems to be on everybody's mind. And I know you've been very busy fielding calls. Is it dying down now?
I think somewhat. A lot of our inquiries seem to be coming through email.
And the inquiries that you're getting, are there more inquiries coming from the winemakers or more inquiries coming from consumers? Or maybe the inquiries are coming from retailers.
Well, I think the wineries themselves are getting the consumer inquiries. We've received some. Mostly it's media people. We've gotten some retailer and restaurateurs and a few consumers inquiring as well as wineries. We sent some information out to our wineries to help them address some of these questions.
What happens when something like this occurs, when a frivolous accusation like this is made? What happens here at the Wine Institute? I know the gears start turning. What are the steps that are taken to address the issue?
Well, when we saw this issue, we realized it was not just affecting these brands, but all wine, and not only just California, but wines made across the globe. So obviously we are putting the full resources behind addressing this issue. And I don't want to go into our strategy or specific activities, but mainly we've been working around the clock trying to respond appropriately.
So mostly just getting what you consider to be credible, accurate information out to especially
everyone.
The media. I mean, obviously that's the first place you want to go, because once you get it in the media's hands, it gets out to everybody else. But do you think that the media has fairly reported this story, or do you think that there's been some sensationalism on the part of the media as well?
Well, the law firm that is going to file this case held a press conference in Los Angeles, and they had some pretty sensational headlines to offer them. And I'm just astounded that, you know, you can hold a press conference and scare people. We just feel like it's a publicity campaign that's very irresponsible into scaring people into thinking they can't drink wine.
It's like watching a courtroom drama where a lawyer shouts out something that's absurdly incorrect and harmful about somebody who's being cross-examined, and the judge says, strike that from the record, but it's already out there. And, you know, the floodgates open at this point in time.
Well, I was reading a quote from one of our wineries, and they said, somebody yelled out that there was a fire, but there's no fire anywhere.
Yeah, but the story is still smoking. I'm talking to Gladys Horiuchi. She's the director of media relations here at the Wine Institute in downtown San Francisco. So you have a number of wineries that have been accused of potentially poisoning the people who consume their wines. Are you giving individual attention to those wineries? Do you get that close to the issue? Or are you generally just disseminating information and trying to keep the story straight?
Well, we're doing both. We're exchanging information and letting them know what information we're able to find out. The entire membership of the Wine Institute is getting information from us as well. Everybody's getting questions.
And obviously, there are tens of thousands of different individual wines that are out there. And, you know, I noticed as I looked at the list of wines that supposedly contained high levels of arsenic in them, those same wines maybe make 20 or 30 different wines, and only one was singled out. So it wouldn't be practical, I think, for anybody to go and test every single bottle of wine that's on retail shelves in California, let alone the world. I wonder how they singled out these particular wineries. It seems to me that it was an effort to get to deep pockets. I mean,
well,
that's just my opinion.
I think it was strategic in the wines that they chose, for sure. But let's just talk about high levels. You know, they're comparing it to the EPA drinking water standard of 10 parts per million as the
right.
safe level of arsenic in water. And then they said the highest level that they found was 50 parts per million. Well, it was just only about 10 years ago that the EPA had 50 parts per million of arsenic as a safe level for drinking water. So it was about a decade ago that they actually lowered it to 10 parts per million. So if wine were to have the same level, 10 parts per billion, as water, you would have to drink 14 glasses of wine to equal the same amount of arsenic that you would in the average intake of water.
You know what? I have an idea. I will drink 14 bottles of wine a day for as long as you ask me to. And you have the
14,
wine.
14 glasses.
14 glasses. Well, I'll drink 14 bottles. And you've got the wine out in the lobby here at the Wine Institute. So I'm willing to be a guinea pig. Because the thing that's so absurd about this story is that we drink much, 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 much more water than we drink wine.
Well, that's just it.
And it's all cumulative. The government bases those estimates on how much arsenic or any other potentially dangerous substance we're likely to consume based on averages of what people would drink.
You have to look at the dose. It's not just the concentration of what's in various food and beverages. You have to look at the dose. The Mayo Clinic says drink 8 glasses of water daily, and that's about the average intake, 6 to 8 glasses. Some even say 10, but we'll take 8. So you would have to drink 14 glasses of wine. That's about 3 bottles of wine in order to get the same amount of arsenic as the daily intake of water.
And that amount in the daily intake of water isn't dangerous at
all.
No,
that's a safe level. And if you're drinking 3 bottles of wine a day, well, I think you've got other issues to be worrying about than arsenic. But arsenic is everywhere. It's in the water, it's in the soil, it's in the air, and it's also in other juices. It's in grains, it's in vegetables, and it's in other alcohol beverages.
Well, you know, this kind of thing is so ridiculous to me because there are so many natural elements that we consume. I'll give you a good example, mercury. You know, we know that in certain types of fish that there are high levels of mercury. Mercury is very poisonous, but the amount of fish that you would have to eat to have any health problems from mercury poisoning, you'd have to eat a whale. And so we know that about things like mercury and lead and even salt in excess is dangerous to the human body. But all of these things occur in nature. And the thing that strikes me as strange about this story is normally when there's a class action suit, there's somebody in a wheelchair, there's somebody in a hospital bed, or there's 20 people who died.
Well, this lawsuit is so baseless. There's no science behind it.
Where is that one wine drinker that is in the hospital or that passed away because he or she drank too much wine?
Well, it isn't there. In fact, I was listening to a TV news report and they were interviewing a Dr. Michael Mullins from Barnes Jewish Hospital, who's also a professor of toxicology. And he said you would have to drink 20,000 glasses of wine.
20,000
glasses of wine to reach a toxic level of arsenic. And those 20 glasses would have to have the high level of 50 parts per billion. So if someone wants to have a glass or two with their dinner, they don't have anything to worry about.
So with wine being the number one adult beverage in America and in many, many other countries, it would seem to me that we have the biggest study group on the safety or potential hazards of wine that you could possibly imagine, meaning that all of the wine drinkers out there in this country, however many millions there are proof positive that wine is very safe and potentially very good for you.
Well, of course, people have read about the cardiovascular benefits for some individuals, according to what is said in the U.S. dietary guidelines. And the U.S. is the largest wine market now in the world.
Yeah, and no one's dying.
Not from arsenic poisoning.
Well,
I don't believe.
No, maybe cirrhosis of the liver for some people, but nobody's dying. And I think that's the irony of this story. The fact that you've got claims being made that maybe the most popular consumable good in this country is dangerous and there's no smoking gun. And I really wanted to come here and talk to you because I just think all of the winemakers who do such a great job don't deserve a black eye.
Well, the U.S. Tax and Trade Bureau regularly tests these wines, and so does the Food and Drug Administration. And all the wine companies that produce the wines on this litigation list, they all export wines abroad, and they're meeting state, federal, and international standards for arsenic. Europe and Canada, they have established limits of 100 parts per billion, and all of our wines are well under these established limits.
And we don't know at this point anything about the methodology that was used by this company called Beverage Grades that started this whole scare to begin with.
Clearly, this Denver-based laboratory is the one who submitted this information to the law firms to get this litigation going. And the law firm held a press conference in Los Angeles. And then this lab had the gall to issue a press release on the same day as the press conference, advertising their laboratory testing service for wines and how retailers could pay for testing through their service to test their wines for arsenic. So clearly, there's a financial motive for the person behind this litigation.
That's like the fox guarding the chicken coop.
It just seems like there's a huge conflict of interest.
Well, it doesn't just seem like it. It is. And the irony here is the fact that we're in a state where the wineries are so incredibly incredibly responsible to the health of the consumers, to the health of the environment.
There's a deep commitment. They started this program 10 years ago, and of course they've been doing these practices for decades, but it's an environmental program to get the wineries to adopt more sustainable wine growing practices. And out of the entire world, our program has the most case production and vineyard acreage participating in this sustainable wine growing program.
And the amazing thing about it is we're seeing a widespread decrease in the use of things like pesticides and an increase in the quality and safety of wine like never before in the history of mankind.
Well, Alice and Jordan will talk more about it, but clearly they're leading the way. And there's lots of good reasons, not only because they're deeply committed environmentalists, but because most of these wineries are families and they care about passing along a healthy business to the next generation.
All right. Well, you'll keep us posted?
Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to go out there and fight the good fight. We'll be back in just a second with more Grape Encounters Radio, and we'll turn the subject to the place it should be, the great things that winemakers are doing in California and beyond to protect your health and to protect the health of this planet.
Thanks, David.
I really appreciate it.
Eat right, get plenty of exercise, wash behind your ears, and drink your wine. It's good for you. So is Grape Encounters Radio.
As a grape encounterist, you know how much fun an hour of conversation about wine can be each week. But there's no way we can pack everything into a show. Listeners just like you are turning the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group into an incredible online community where like-minded wine lovers converse, share information, and inspire each other with posts on a variety of interesting topics. If you haven't discovered your community, join in today on Facebook by entering Grape Encounters Radio.
We're all guilty of sin. We open a costly bottle of wine and recork it with the intent of drinking the rest later. But later comes and goes, and that delicious wine also goes. South, that is. The Coravin is the most reliable way to enjoy your wine without any concern about the unconsumed wine going bad. And while the Coravin wine access system costs a bit more than other preservation systems, it does something they don't. It works. Perfectly. The Coravin is a beautifully engineered handheld device that gives you access to your wine through a small needle that you gently push straight through the cork. Inert argon gas is injected into the bottle, while as little or as much of the wine that you want flows right into your glass. The argon gas keeps your wine so safe, it's as though you never opened the bottle. Want to learn more? Simply click the Coravin link online at grapeencounters.com. A wine is a terrible thing to waste. Get your Coravin at grapeencounters.com.
If you'd like to hear more no-nonsense talk about wine and all the fun that goes with it, check out winetalkshow.com. At winetalkshow.com, you'll find a massive library of content for fun-loving, unpretentious people who aren't afraid to step outside the lines and challenge conventional wisdom. We'll take you places you've never been before. That's a promise. Expand your wine horizons in unimaginable ways at winetalkshow.com.
On and on, sustainability. On and on, sustainability.
Connecting winemakers, wine lovers, wine adventures, and all things wine from around the globe. You are listening to Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson.
Back with Grape Encounters Radio, I'm now down the hall from Gladys and in the chambers of Allison Jordan, who's the executive director of the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. Do I have that right?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, you know, it's so sad to me that this arsenic story threatens to overshadow the really big story that happens at this time each year, which is the ongoing efforts on the part of winemakers to make the absolute safest wines and also to protect the environment and also to create amazing wines without a lot of inputs outside of the winery. So let's talk about how far we've come and what you're celebrating this go-round in 2015.
Great. Well, we are celebrating Down to Earth Month. It's the entire month of April, and it's really about recognizing the leadership of California vintners and growers and all that they do to protect the environment and to be not only good environmental stewards, but also good community stewards, and also looking at economic feasibility so we can continue to make great wines for generations to come.
It's really strange because when the conversations about sustainability first began some years ago, I think there certainly seemed to be some skepticism on the part of not just grape growers and winemakers, but, you know, people who were in the agricultural industries and beyond. And the thing that I find really interesting is how once they become sustainable or get close to becoming sustainable, what a turn on it is for them.
It's actually so interesting. I think there's this really healthy competition really between the vintners and growers, looking at their practices, sharing information and being very collegial about it, but also wanting to find that next innovative practice or a way that really makes them stand out. And it's exciting to see just how far the adoption of sustainable practices really has come. We've had 1,900 winery and vineyards basically do a self-assessment using the
1,900.
Code. 1,900. Yes. And they represent nearly 2/3 of all wine grape acreage and wine case production in the state. So it's really amazing just to see their level of interest, their level of commitment. And then we also have sustainability reports that are publicly available that show how we're doing in terms of adoption, our annual progress reports.
I think that a lot of people, especially within California, don't have a real appreciation of just how gigantic the wine industry is in this state. And moreover, just how big the wine industry is in this country. I mean, even though we produce, you know, 90%+ of the wines that are consumed in America, you can drive in parts of California for an hour and never not see grapes along the way. So this is a big deal.
It is a big deal. We're the 4th largest wine producing region in the world. We have 5,900 wine grape growers and over 4,000 wineries.
Isn't that amazing?
And so it's incredible. And yet, really, we only take up less than 1% of the acreage of the state. So I know sometimes people seem to think that it's very large in terms of our footprint, but it's, you know, relatively small, but at the same time, such a significant industry, such a signature industry.
Are there growers of other products that are looking at what the wine industry is doing and following suit?
We're definitely seeing it spread throughout all of the U.S. wine regions. I'm in touch with Michigan and Maryland and others that are adopting these types of practices. And we see other agricultural sectors certainly looking at our program as a model. And we're active in some of the groups that involve multiple ag sectors as well to help share that information.
So talk about some of the cool things that sustainability includes, because I think people have an idea about what it means to be sustainable, but how that translates into the wine industry is pretty interesting. And some of the things that are going on grape growing properties are just awesome.
It is. It's fantastic. Well, you can see some things that are just very visible, like the adoption of solar and alternative energy, which is great from an energy perspective. But some things that maybe aren't as visible, but are interesting once you know, like insulating tanks and refrigeration, those things really matter too. We also know water is such a critical issue, and a vast majority of the industry is now using drip irrigation and really monitoring and using careful applications of water to be as efficient as possible.
Let me stop you right there for just a second, because I think everybody in this country is aware of the water issues that are going on in California. And by all estimates, it looks like we're in for another year of drought, a 4th unparalleled year of having water shortages. And what's so interesting to me is the fact that as part of the sustainability movement, the vendors, for the most part, have not suffered much at the hands of the drought. In fact, if anything, it seems like their consumption of water has gone way down and they've become very committed to using very little.
That's true. And I think this actually goes back even before the drought conditions. Wine grapes use a relatively lower level of water than others, but also we're very careful with our application because it does impact wine quality, which is really important, of course. Then also we've had that conservation ethic for a long time. So things like drip irrigation, that's not new. That's something that's been more and more adopted over time. And we're also seeing the wineries and vineyards being very active in their local region about their their particular water conditions and what public policy needs to be in place to be more effective.
And some really interesting technologies that I've seen out there where they're very carefully monitoring not just a vineyard, but microscopic parts of the vineyard, and are using technology to surgically apply water to sometimes just a particular plant.
That's right. And then you see wineries being very innovative in terms of reusing water within the winery, not just using it once, but using it multiple times. It goes on and on.
And let's not forget about all those wine barrels that are being turned into Adirondack chairs.
That's right. Well, recycling is obviously...
And a zillion other things.
Yeah, and animals in the vineyard, and you can think about all kinds of different ways that sustainable practices are being employed.
So if a listener wants to know more about the sustainability program and some of the celebrations that are going on around it, because there's a lot of activities, right?
There are a lot of activities, Earth Day festivals and organic wine trails and dog-friendly vineyard hikes and wildlife talks, horseback rides, you name it. And you can find out more by going to discovercaliforniawines.com/D2E for Down to Earth.
All right. So we'll also put on the Grape Encounters website, grapeencounters.com. We'll put a link to that. So if you don't remember D2E, you could just go there and click on the link and it'll take you over to the Down to Earth month materials.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, David.
All right. That's going to do it for Grape Encounters today. Hey, Allison, I really appreciate you coming on.
It was really fun. Thank you so much.
We'll be back next week and introduce you to a slew of incredible Greek winemakers. Do you like Greek wine, Allison?
I can't say I'm very familiar with it. I'm pretty loyal to my California industry.
Oh, hands across the world, Allison.
I know.
Seriously. All right. Well, it'll be Greek winemakers next week when we return with Grape Encounters Radio.